Hey guys, this is Jason. Welcome to the Sports Spectrum Podcast. This is a different kind of, I guess, podcast that you might listen to because this wasn't in the plans to release this podcast. But unfortunately, I felt it was important to release an older interview that we did. It's from a year ago with a guy named Jonathan Charks, a sports writer who worked with The Ringer. He mostly covered the NBA and was just so well respected in the industry of sports and media. He's just one of the best dudes that you'll ever come across. And all you got to do is Google his name or search his name on Twitter, and you'll see all the people that had nothing but great things to say about Jonathan. Unfortunately, he passed away on Saturday night, September 10th, at the age of 34, super young. He was diagnosed with this very rare form of cancer, sarcoma, back in April of 2021. And at 33 years old, was forced to face mortality and death and where he was going to spend eternity. And, you know, Jonathan is a husband to Melissa, dad to Jackson, and wrote this amazing piece on The Ringer, which Jonathan worked for. Bill Simmons was his boss. You might know Bill Simmons, a longtime ESPN guy who started and is the founder of The Ringer, super successful. And Jonathan wrote this piece called The Long Night of the Soul. And in that piece, it really was about his diagnosis, the role his faith played, and how he was forced to face his own mortality. And it was in that piece, when I read that I thought, if he'd be willing, I would love to have Jonathan come on Sports Spectrum to dive deeper into that faith aspect. A lot of shows don't want to talk about that, and I get it. But I wanted to ask Jonathan about his faith in Jesus, his testimony, and then getting that diagnosis and how his faith has been tested and how he's still leaning on God and trusting in God ultimately through this. Unfortunately, he did pass away a couple days ago, and I wrestled with even thinking about bringing this interview back. But I listened to this interview two times over the past couple days, and I thought his words were so inspiring to me and encouraging. The way that he was intentional about wanting to get the gospel out there and using this diagnosis and this battle that he was going through with cancer to ultimately point people to Jesus and force them to look at their own mortality. And I was just so encouraged by it that I thought, let's bring this interview back. I hope it encourages you. I hope it gives you a peace and a hope and an urgency to know that this life is fleeting. And Jonathan's words were really powerful to me. I'll tell you more about Jonathan and ways that you can help and give and donate on the back end of this interview. But I really just wanted you to hear his words again, ultimately knowing that he didn't make it, that he passed on, but now that he's rejoicing in heaven with our Savior. This is Jonathan Charks with The Ringer from October of 2021. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me on.
Your faith's an important part of your story. We're going to talk about, you know, kind of how that faith has played a role in what you've been walking through this year in 2021. But where does that start for you? How do you begin a journey with the Lord? How does faith play a part of Jonathan or come into the life of Jonathan when he's younger?
Yeah, I didn't grow up in the church, actually. So I was grew up pretty secular. And I really even wasn't even thinking about it until I was probably in my early to mid 20s. I met a coworker who was a believer and we became really good friends. And he kind of introduced me to the faith and the church. And then there was like a slow process of about a year or two of me kind of going from over here all the way to over here in terms of becoming a believer. And I would say I probably became a Christian about like 24, 25.
And was that a hard time for you, like just trying to figure out and make that decision? Because you say it was a gradual process. It was for me as well. And I think I was 27 when I started my journey. So I kind of was like you, grew up kind of in a secular world and really didn't have religion or faith or anything like that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I was always kind of looking for something. I think in the back of my mind, I mean, obviously easy to say in hindsight now, but in the back of my mind, it just seemed like there was something missing. I was never really happy. I never felt like the world could offer me what I always knew I wanted more. I didn't quite know what that was. And so I was just always looking for stuff. And then meeting my friend and just seeing the way he lived his life, it was appealing to me. Mm. For me, the big hurdle was just like actual belief. Was like, I got the like idea of, oh, here's a good way to live your life. But for me, the hurdle was actually believing in God. And once that was really the hurdle, once I got that, then the other stuff came from there.
Hmm. How did the job with the Ringer come about?
So that was, I came on, they were obviously were from Grantland, the whole, yes. Most of those guys, they start their own thing. And I was part of the initial one of writers they brought on. We were a startup in 2016. So that was like 5-6 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so they, they were just, yeah, they hired a bunch of younger writers. And I was one of the ones they hired when they started.
Nice. That's cool. It's such a cool job that you have. And Jonathan, it's interesting because it wasn't until May 20th when I saw your article on The Ringer that had nothing to do with the NBA, called The Long Night of the Soul, a story of facing fear, confronting mortality, and turning to faith. And when I read that, it kind of surprised me a little bit to read that on The Ringer, but I also understood mm-hmm. how poignant and personal it was. I want to talk about that article in a second, but first, kind of take us back to maybe March or April of this year, and all that you were going through that led up to, I think it was April 16th when you got your diagnosis.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got COVID this year or early this year and had like a 2 weeks where it was pretty tough, but I just never got better after that. And the doctors didn't really understand why. And I was kept getting worse and worse and they really didn't know what to do. So not that this doesn't, I'm sure you've heard of this like long COVID, post-COVID syndrome. Sure. And they're like, well, I guess you have this because we don't understand why you're so sick. And so I, for like 2 months, they're just thinking I have long COVID basically, and they have no real way to treat it. And I'm just getting worse and worse till eventually they just start really kind of thinking outside the box in terms of possible diagnoses. I ended up going to the ER 3 times before they figured out that I actually had a super rare form of cancer. It's called a Ewing's-like sarcoma. And now I've talked to someone else who had the same thing happen. And I think it's happened somewhat regularly this year, where anyone who has a really rare disease, which they wouldn't normally think you would have, they're just kind of like, oh, it's probably COVID-related. Mm. So it's like this big bugger, like, you must have something to do with COVID. But I actually have this crazy rare type of cancer, and it took them a long time to figure out to be like, well, actually, it's this.
Hmm. Take me to that day when you find out, April 16th. Obviously, you're a young dude. I don't know how old you are, but I'm guessing you're 33 was what I was going to guess. So you're 33 years old and you get this, you find out this diagnosis, but you actually wrote about it in your article that it was a day of relief in some way.
Yeah, because like the weirdest thing when you're sick is when they don't know and they don't know what to do. That's really frustrating and scary. It's like, why am I getting sick? Like, we don't even, and there, no one knows what to do and how to treat you. And you just get worse. And you're just like, I need an answer. So I was diagnosed with cancer and it was a relief at first. But then as I got into it, it just became like, it was just so shocking because no one expects to die of like long COVID or whatever. So I'm always thinking, well, at some point we'll get this figured out and I'll go about my life and whatever. But with the cancer diagnosis, and because it's a pretty rare and very aggressive kind of cancer, it's like, oh no, actually, you've been diagnosed with this. We do have some things to treat it, but the numbers say like you're probably gonna die in the near future. And that was just, I mean, it took I think I wrote this article, I got diagnosed in like April. The article came out like a month or two later, and that in between was just a lot of processing. Because it's like, oh, I actually could die. And like I talk about in the article, I mean, I'm just not thinking that's even a possibility. Like you don't go through your life in your early 30s thinking, and you're in perfect health, that death is even a possibility.
Yeah. And then you wrote that article. That's where I saw your story. I'm sure that's where a lot of people saw your story. A lot of people read and listen and consume content from The Ringer. What prompted you to write the article? And to kind of share that with the world and even the approach to maybe your editors or some of the people that are above you to come with this story because like I said, it's not an MBA story or a typical you know, story that you're covering or writing. This is a very personal story and a very vulnerable and sort of transparent story that you share.
Yeah, I mean, the main thing was just the opportunity to talk about the gospel and the setting of The Ringer. If honestly, if I wasn't a believer, I'm not sure I'd have written it, because it was it was very mentally exhausting to get to that place to work on something like that. But it was like, okay, this is important because I can use this, you know, I mean, in the article I'm quoting the Bible and stuff, that's not something you'd normally do, obviously. Right, so like, to me, I'm like, this is an opportunity to talk about it. And like, it's for me, it's the whole time, the ability to talk about the gospel through this is some consolation for what I'm going through. It's like, okay, this is a really negative thing that's happened to me and my family, but I'm going to use my faith to get through it. And then I'm going to talk about it because, okay, that I feel like is why someone like me, I had the position I have in the first place, is to talk about my faith and talk about the gospel on some level. So it almost be like, I'm trying to think of the analogy here. It's like, I have this opportunity. I'd be foolish to turn it down. It's like, I have, obviously I have the window to say something different and I can use it or not. But I might as well do it, because at least that brings something out of this really negative situation that's positive.
Well, first of all, kudos to you, but also to The Ringer for letting you write something like that, because that's, you know, we're very open about faith here on Sports Spectrum, and that's what our niche is, and that's what we do. But that's not what The Ringer does, or that's not what my former employer does at ESPN or any place like that. That's not what they do. They kind of try to keep that out for the most part, because it can be polarizing in some ways.
Sure. Yeah.
But you get the okay to write this. What was the feedback like from maybe the people that you work with, but certainly the people that read it?
It was pretty overwhelming, actually. I mean, in a positive way. Like, I got a lot of really positive feedback, but it was almost like too much feedback in terms of, I mean, I've got like hundreds of me. It took me like a month to even respond, because I got like hundreds of emails about different people, what they thought, and they're affecting them. And everyone was, it was like overwhelmingly positive, but it's still just kind of a lot. Cause all of a sudden just because I have this massive spotlight on me that you're not really used to normally, even though at my position, there's some kind of spotlight on me, it just became much, much bigger. And it took a little time to just process that. And it just, it's different. It's like, you can feel like, I understand a little more now, like, people get famous. It's super weird, man. It's a weird place to be at somehow.
Yeah. But at the same time, like you said, what a cool opportunity to talk about Jesus and to share the gospel with people. I have to imagine this almost became, I mean, this, the response and the feedback had to be, I don't know, encouraging, I guess. I know it was overwhelming for those, especially who were touched by the part about the gospel and not just the fact that you're battling a rare disease.
Well, I guess the thing that was hard, and it's like, I wrote about this on my blog. I have like a personal blog where I write about the Bible sometimes, was when you open up about this kind of thing, people share their experiences with you, which is really, it's a very, you feel very honored they would do that. But it's like you get a very small taste into the amount of pain and suffering in the world, you know? So people are telling me about their children who died, their spouses who died, the struggles they've been through. And it's just like, man, I remember it's just, so like I wrote about this. It was like, I was going through the gospels. I'm reading this and I'm reading the gospel, especially the parts where like Jesus is walking around and people are just like, the sick come to him. Mm. And everyone's like, oh my God, Jesus, you're, and it's like, yes, there's so much, you forget that. You forget the amount of pain and suffering people are going through, mostly in silence. And when you put yourself in the position I was in, you get a very, very small look into all of that pain and suffering in the world. And it's really cool that it's like, and I'm glad that I could help people through that, obviously, in some very small way. But you're just kind of like, whoa, man, you know, like, like, you know, like, okay. Dozens of people who've had cancer and their kids have died. And you're just like, I don't even know how to respond. I don't even know what to say. It's just so, it's so sad.
Yeah. It's that wrestle. And you talked about that, the line, right, for me, when I read your article that I thought was really poignant, I'm going to read it again. And I think it's one we all have to kind of come to grips with as humans, it reads this: most Americans spend so much time striving, trying to be successful, trying to climb further up the ladder, trying to achieve, trying to give our lives meaning. It all fades away in that moment when all you are left to grapple with is what you really believe about life and death. It doesn't matter who you are or what you have done or how much medical care your money can buy. We all have to face that moment. It's the only moment when every single person on earth is truly equal. We come into this world with nothing and leave it the same way. Man, let me tell you something, Jonathan. When I read that, that was the one that really just kind of, I wouldn't say opened my eyes, but gave me a really good reminder of the fact that, man, maybe there's people reading this who are wrestling and maybe have no faith or a little faith, and they really need to think about this based upon your journey and what you wrote about. Tell me about that wrestle that you faced and maybe are still facing in some ways with your faith.
Yeah. I've talked to my wife a lot about this. There's a lot of moments in a journey like this, and you're like, do I really believe this? Like, right. Do I really believe it? Because you'll read something in the Bible, and or you'll talk to like one of your church friends. And it's like, if these things they're saying are true, then I can get through this situation. This situation can be redeemed. This situation, even if I do die, there's something to like look forward to down the line. There's some, like, my wife will be taken care of. But it's like, am I really going to believe that in this moment and choose to act on those beliefs? Because if I do choose to act on those beliefs, then I can get through this. There are some things, but it's hard in that moment. It's like, because you're actually forced to choose to do it. Because I would say, like, most of the times you go through life and there's so many things in the Bible. Here's a good example. So Paul a bunch of times talks about how, like, I praise God for my struggles, for my afflictions, for the thorn in my side.
Yes.
And like, it's something when your life is going good, you're like, oh, that's cool. Yeah, I respect that, Paul, but whatever. But you don't really think about it. It doesn't really mean anything to you. But then, like, you're sitting in chemotherapy and you're like, okay, am I really going to thank God for this? Like, is this something I really want to be grateful for that I'm going through? And you're like, I don't, but apparently I'm supposed to. And like, that for me has been a huge part of my journey. I think I'll write about this at some point. Is like, getting through chemo has been like, I have to like thank God for this somehow. I have to sit here in this room and thank God for what I'm going through. And when you do that, these things happen. It's like, it's almost like these are things you've been given as like a playbook for when your life gets hard. But it's when it actually does happen, you actually have to follow the plays, right? Yeah, you know, because you don't want to at that point. You don't want to at all. Like, this, it's not intuitive, right? You don't think, oh yeah, like most people don't think, okay, yeah, I'm gonna go sit in a room for 5 days getting poisoned and thank God about it. Like, you just, that's not something you're gonna think about. But when you go through an experience like that and you're forced to actually do it, it makes it so much easier eventually, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I like the playbook analogy a lot because I think that's a great point. Some of us have to be forced to, you know, run the plays a lot earlier, and some, because a lot of us think it's a great playbook and we'll kind of cruise through, and then, you know, we get to 80 or 85 and we have to start thinking about the end of our life. That's not how this life works, obviously, and how we all go through it. Tell me about the support system of your family. You've mentioned your wife quite a few times, and just kind of helping you through this as well and being a support to you, because you can't go through this journey alone, obviously, as you battle.
Yeah.
You need people around you and community around you. So particularly, I'm imagining your wife being an important part of this. Tell us about that part of this.
Well, I mean, the hardest part, so we have a 18-month-old son. So it's like, it's literally impossible for me to really take care of him a lot during this process. So then it becomes, you got to have like in-laws to help take care of him when we're too tired. Because that's been like, it's so weird because your energy level is going this, like up and down. And his energy level is going like this all the time.
Yes, that happens.
Like, there are no days off when you're a parent, but I have to take days off. So like, there's just so many, my wife, my in-laws, my mother, people in church. There's so many people who've helped us and helped our family practically, because it's like not even physically possible to go through chemotherapy and take care of an 18-month-old. It's just not. So you have to rely on other people.
Yeah, that's good. Answer this question, because I was thinking about this. I'm sure people might have asked you this, especially those that may not have a strong faith or any faith or even the same faith as you and I do. But we hear it a lot. How can a good and loving God let bad things happen? Or going even further, how can a good and loving God let bad things happen to good people? We see that a lot. We hear that a lot. I see it a lot in social, you know, when we're thinking about COVID or we're thinking about a situation maybe like yours. What would your response to be? What would your response be in something like this if somebody came to you and asked you that question?
That's a tough one. I mean, it's tough, right? It's really tough. I would say first, like there's the whole good person thing. Who is not? I would say like there are no good people. Me personally, it might look from the outside like I'm a quote unquote good person. Sure. But if you knew, you know, the life I've lived before I was a Christian, even the life after, there's so many things that I've done that I've needed forgiveness for. So I wouldn't necessarily call myself I would say that first, like a good person. I wouldn't call myself a good person. I would say there are no good people. As far as like the loving God and all that, I mean, these are the questions that we've been trying to figure this out for 2000 years. Like, it's not easy. Like there's, right. I try to give pat answers. It's hard to not give a pat answer. It's not helpful. I usually, if someone asks me a question like that, I'll try to move it towards less of the philosophical angle and just kind of talk about them. Because usually there's some kind of thing happening in their life that they're responding to more often than not.
Right.
Right. It's most people don't really like talking about philosophy or care enough to get into like, you know, Aquinas and what's the other guy's name? Augustine. Like most people don't even care, or C.S. Lewis, right? And these theologians. You can talk about that stuff. And there is a very, very small amount of people who would actually care to do that. But most people you talk to, it's more about their personal stuff, what's going on in their life. How can God do that to me? How can God do that to someone I care about? And you want to start the conversation there, I think. Especially as earlier in my faith, I feel like for sure you kind of want to talk about philosophy. It's like, this is personal more often than not. Like, ground the conversation. And you want to have care for it. Like, you don't want to give some pat flip answer. Oh, God has a plan. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's not helpful at all more often than not. So it's like, what's going on in your life? Where are you coming from? That's where I usually try to go with that line of thought.
No, I think that's smart. I think that's a really good way, because like you said, if you start trying to drop any kind of like apologetics or theological, whatever it is, you know, background that you might have as far as the research you've done or whatever, it's like, yeah, that's not being relatable to people who just want to know why things that happen are sometimes bad. And we can't answer that. So I think that's a really good response. What have you learned from God during all this, as you've gone through this, especially this year? What's he taught you? What's he shown you?
It's a good question. I would say though, beyond like the one we were just talking about of the playbook and getting through that, I think the importance of community has been huge. A really, really important. I always knew the importance of community. And I think for me, on a really personal level, I'm writing something right now, talking about with my son. And I think, so right when we got diagnosed, they would say, people like the doctors, like, oh, you got to make a will, you got to get your finances in order. And obviously that's important, because the heart behind that is going to provide financially for your son if something was to happen.
Sure.
And then as I'm going through this, I'm like, I grew up with my dad. So I kind of have a firsthand knowledge of how this goes. And it was less about the financial aspect, because for one thing, kids don't really understand money to begin with. They'll be fine. I mean, that's too pat. But like the financial aspect is not what your kid's gonna miss about you not being there. So it's the personal, it's the relational aspect of it. And what I just feel like God is saying, and it's like the importance of being involved in my church and my local community is like beyond just like my personal well-being is, okay, if something were to happen to me, I want people in my son's life. I want people who are going to be there down the road. I want people who can help him, right? And that's only going to happen if I provide for him relationally. Mm. And so it's like, I'm just trying to say, like, instead of being like, okay, I want to put some money in the piggy bank so my son is going to be okay. It's like, I'm going to invest in my friends and older people in the church that if something happens to me, they'll be in a position to invest in my son and help him out and like provide for him relationally. And I think our country is so, we're very rich financially, but we're very bereft relationally, I would say most people. And that's what really matters.
It's all that matters, in my opinion, because that's the memories. Like you say, you come in with nothing and you leave with nothing. But what you leave behind is those memories and those relational relationships that you make with different people. So absolutely. How are you doing today? As we record this, it's the fall 2021. It's, I don't know, what is it, 5-6 months or so since all this took place. How are you doing?
I'm pretty tired. So I've been doing chemo since April. So that's like 4 or 5 months. And then I'm doing one more round and they're going to reset and then like trying to do some scans and figure out where we are. So I don't know how much you need to get. I don't know. Like it's kind of they're very keep it real simple. They can't know how my tumors, how it's going until I stop doing chemo, but they also want to do as much chemo as possible before they stop. Right. So I'm about at the limit of how much I can do. So we're going to do it, stop, and see where we are. So it's really frustrating in a way because you don't actually know. The doctors are positive, but they're just guessing. They don't know for sure until they can actually do the scans. So it's like things seem to be going well, but we don't know until we can actually figure out, get these scans done. But like for the most part, like my experience the last 4 months, man, it's just chemo. I do it for 5 days every 3 weeks, and that's just been absolutely brutal. And I've learned how to get through it, but there's also this kind of a cumulative effect of your body is being tired all the time, and I'm kind of at the end of that.
Well I know we can pray for you physically for healing. Is there anything else that our listeners, as we wind down here, like, can we pray for you? What else can we pray for you, Jonathan, and for your family?
I think the long term of what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. And like my son is 18 months old. I want to be around when he's 18 years.
Of course.
I think that's the main thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll definitely do that. And I know a lot of people listening will be praying for you, my friend. My last question, I think it's kind of open-ended here, but I love the title of your article, The Long Night of the Soul. Why is it important for all of us to look within and examine the long night of all of our souls?
Oh man, leave me with a tough one. I think it's important to, okay, so here's another example of a Bible verse I didn't really take seriously. In James 4, and he talks about, don't be saying, I'm gonna do this next year, I'm gonna do that next year, going to town and make my money. Say, if God wills it to be so, then I will do it. You are nothing but a mist that comes for a short while and then leaves. And that's one of those things you read and you don't even think about, but it's like, no, I didn't necessarily live my life before this thinking I could die next year if God doesn't will it, if God wills it to exist, right? You think I'm going to live 7 to 85 years based on I'm an American with good health, right? That's how you live your life and you plan your life a certain way based on that. So maybe in the last year, everyone's kind of, maybe for the pandemic, right? That's kind of probably changed folks a little bit to their perspective. But yeah, but the reality is that like the Bible doesn't promise you a long and happy life. And it's really easy to believe that, but it's not the case. And so, and even if it does, I think I wrote about in the article, it's like, even if you do live your 80 years, it isn't like when you're 81 and you're like, oh, I'm ready to die now. Like that doesn't happen. Like my wife's grandparents are in their 80s. They're not ready to die. They still want to live. They would still be really heartbroken to go to the hospital and to get a diagnosis like this. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So at some point, you know, we all know it's going to happen at some point, but it might happen sooner than you think. And even if it doesn't, it's still going to be there. And you still have to decide, what do I really believe about the world? When I'm actually forced to believe, to put make a choice about it.
Yeah. No, this has been encouraging for me, my friend. Like I said, we'll all be praying for you, Jonathan Sharks, and just appreciate you sharing your story on the Ringer and also here on Sports Spectrum. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. I had a good time.
And that was Jonathan Sharks from the Ringer from back in October of 2021. Jonathan passed away just a couple days ago, September 10th, 2022, at the age of 34 from cancer. His wife, Melissa, his son, Jackson. He leaves behind those two people that he talked about, you know, beautifully, I think, on our show from last year, and about the things that he wanted us to pray for, ultimately for his son. No family should have to go through this on this earth in our minds, right? But nothing's promised. Ultimately, the only thing that God promises is that if we trust in him, we put our faith in him, that we spend eternity with him. And I'm glad Jonathan did that. I'm glad Jonathan saw this in the midst of a really tough battle as an opportunity to point people to Jesus. Those are powerful. And I wrestled with this. I didn't know if I wanted to bring this interview back. I felt like maybe we were trying to capitalize on a terrible moment for a family. And that's not my heart at all. My heart is that people who hear this would hear Jonathan's words, remember him, be encouraged by him, and then maybe feel a sense of urgency to want to go out and share about the hope that's within them. I know it's done that for me, just going back and listening to Jonathan's interview a couple times over the past few days, which ultimately is what led me to decide to bring this interview back to you. I hope it encouraged you, and I hope we can all remember Jonathan in that way. You know, and I wasn't friends with Jonathan. You know, I didn't really know him that well. You know, I spent time with him on the show. We texted a little bit, but there are people who knew him really well and worked with him every single day. And I haven't seen even remotely a negative word about anything that he was about. You know, Bill Simmons tweeted the news on Sunday and called it devastating news, obviously. He said, "We lost our friend Jonathan Sharks. He was a fantastic basketball writer and thinker and an even better family man and friend. He elevated everything we did." Those are Bill Simmons' words. And for me, I get it when people say he was a better family man, a friend and all that. And that's wonderful. And that's a witness for Christ that we can all be better people, love our neighbor as ourselves. But I understand that the places like The Ringer or ESPN or any big media company might not want to share ultimately the faith aspect because it's controversial, right? Or it offends people, or it's religious, or whatever the word is. And I get it. But ultimately, we're going to have to stand before God and make a decision here. Or not even stand before God and make a decision. We're going to have to stand before God and deal with the consequences to our decisions when we die. And I love that Jonathan recognized that when he was still alive and said, "Listen, I'm trusting in God, I'm trusting in Jesus, and I want other people to know about that faith that I have. I want other people to know about the faith that I have. It's ultimately why I'm on this show and do this show. And it's ultimately why I want people to hear about the gospel, the true hope that is found in the eternal sanctification of life with Jesus Christ, to be able to spend eternity with him in heaven." And Jonathan's death has got me thinking a lot about that over the past couple days. It's got me thinking about a lot of people that I used to work with or I'm friends with who work at very big media companies that have proclaimed faith in Jesus. And I hope that they would see this as an urgency to share the gospel. And yes, you're paid to do a job and you should have fun and enjoy the job. And we shouldn't just sit here and ponder, you know, all of these philosophical discussions every single second. But ultimately, what matters? The gospel matters. Where we spend eternity is what matters. Jonathan talked about it. It's the long night of the soul because ultimately we're all going to die. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Jonathan. I hope it encouraged you. And I hope his words live on forever as people continue to think about how they can be better people, better husbands, better dads. But ultimately, we have a decision to make. Where are we going to go when we die? I pray that you would search the scriptures, that you would listen to Jonathan's voice, and that you would make a decision to follow Christ. Thanks for listening.